listening to The Realist Report. And now your host, John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. The website is therealistreport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of these podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in over the years. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to the Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications if you are not already. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all of the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guests this evening. Jim Rizzoli and Diane King are joining us. I met Jim and Diane at the Jim Traficant Memorial Tribute in Washington, D.C. back in 2015, and we've stayed in touch ever since. Jim and Diane are two of the most active and courageous revisionists in America today, and I am delighted to have them on the program together this evening. Jim, welcome, sir. How are you this evening?
I'm very fine. Thank you, John, for having us on here.
Yes, of course. And Diane, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you again for having both of us on. It's quite a challenge, I'm sure.
Yes, it definitely can be, especially with how busy I am. I'm sure you guys are very busy these days. It's been a while. As I mentioned, we met back in 2015, and I had been familiar, especially with Jim's work, prior to even meeting him back in 2015. And, you know, we've kind of stayed in touch ever since. Jim, you were on the podcast back in November of 2015, so shortly after the tribute, and I was a guest on your program. You were doing an interview series that I believe has been censored from YouTube. You can kind of explain that here in just a moment. I did find the video, though, and I'm going to have a link to it when I post this program. So it is still available, although I don't know if it's on your YouTube channel. So we've done interviews in the past, and it's long overdue to sit down and talk again. So just to kind of get started, what have you guys been up to? Tell us about your websites and your YouTube channel.
Well, like you said, that video, I mean, that discussion between you and I'm not sure where it is. In the last probably month, they've taken down 5 of my YouTube channels, and this all happened at once. So they must have had some sort of purge, you know, someone had a hot purge button, you know, and there, and they just purged all my YouTubes that were my major ones at the time. And then the next purge happened like a week or two later. They purged the Vimeo site. I had a Vimeo site. Diane had a Vimeo site. Another fellow we had a Vimeo site, and he had to pay for these sites. It cost, one of them was like $250 a year. Yeah, they all, you know, they cost money. And they ended up just without notice or with notice. I can't remember. They just said, we're taking down your site. So, yeah, we had a stuff up. It goes up, it goes down. And I still have several, probably 4 or 5 YouTube sites still going that I still can put things up. So it's not like I'm down and out. It's just you always have to keep one step ahead of them. And right now it seems like what they're doing is they're just censoring my videos instead of deleting them, which, you know, I guess is better than nothing. But right off the bat, they're banned. My videos are banned right when they go up in, I think, 41, 42 countries.
Wow. And that does not surprise me. I mean, you've really focused on revisionism and the alleged Jewish Holocaust, this narrative of history that has been highly weaponized against the white race specifically, but really against all of humanity. It's such an outrageous lie. And it's, you know, the bedrock of this entire New World Order agenda. So anybody talking critically about it, exposing it, dealing with it in any sort of critical manner is going to get censored, and that's certainly been the case for you. Now, I know you had the channel, the League of Extraordinary Revisionists, where you were interviewing basically all of the top historical revisionists, you know, going back to the 60s and 70s, people that have written books about this, and some of them have been persecuted and sent to prison and things like this. So, you know, you were really interviewing the basically the top experts in this field. So that entire channel, you're telling me, has been totally censored and deleted from YouTube?
No, no, that one I believe is still up, as far as I understand. Cause I, you know, that's like a special channel that I only put those videos up. So I haven't had any, you know, information showing that those are, and I haven't looked to see if they are, but I don't really think they are, because when they take something down, you get a thing that says your channel has been deleted. So I don't think those, there's two of those channels that have my interviews with the revisionist people on those. And I think those are still up.
Okay, very good. I'm going to try to do a search for it and see if I can find it right now. I was doing it right before we started and I couldn't find it, but maybe it is still up there. I will try to have everything linked, at least anything, you know, any of the channels that are still available when I post this program, so people can check it out. And as I mentioned, I know I did find our video where you interviewed me, and I think we pretty much focused most of the time on the Holocaust, and I had just visited the official Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and I know we talked a lot about that. So it was a great discussion, and people can check that out once I post this program. So do you guys actually have a website that you're storing everything, or that we could, you know, kind of point people to, you know, if they're interested in your work or in any of your videos?
Well, my main website is ccfiile.com. And that's where, you know, I've had that website for years. It started out actually with immigration. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's CC file stands for Concerned Citizens and Friends of Illegal Immigration Law Enforcement. So that's the acronym that we came up with. But what I did is I kind of morphed it into all my other stuff. I figured since it's there, I might as well just use it for everything. And that's what I've done. And that's that website. My other my it's not really a website. I have a WordPress site, jrizoli.wordpress.com. And then there's Rizzoli TV, rizolitv.com. And you know, those are pretty much the main things that I'm dealing with. And again, the League of Extraordinary Revisionist website, which is the one you probably would be looking for.
Yes. And by the way, I did find the YouTube channel. It does look like it's still up here. So I will have that linked, of course. And you have at least 15 or probably more than that video interviews, as I mentioned, of some of the top revisionists, you know, in history. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're interested in this topic. And I'm sure most of our listeners definitely are interested in this topic. So you know what, let's kind of jump right into it. I wanted to kind of talk about this article that was recently written by Ron Unz, who maintains this website unz.com. And I know Diane sent this out. You guys have a pretty extensive mailing list where you send links out and whatnot, and I received this, and I didn't even read this until I you know, got Diane's email the other day, and I found the article just absolutely fascinating. It was published August 27th of this year, so just a couple, you know, a week or so ago. And it's a really, really excellent, well put together, well written article. And I had been familiar with the UNS website, but I hadn't seen this article. Do you want to kind of talk about this article and maybe give us your impression, Jim? And then Diane, I'll let you do the same thing.
Okay, sure. My brother Joe actually was the one who directed me to. At first, I didn't really know what it was, because it's such a long article. It's 40. If you print it up, I think it's 41 pages. All right, so it's extremely long. So if anybody, you know, got into the site to read it, and for those, you're probably going to put a link to it. But the article is called Reason. Let's see, Reason Magazine in Holocaust Denial. That's the name on top of the article there. Oh no, American Pravda Holocaust Denial, and by Ron Unz. So that's how it's listed in the top. But I mean, if you looked up his name, Ron Unz, and Holocaust Denial, this would come up. But anyway, yeah. So in the beginning, my brother Joe says to me, "Well, here's a real article about the topic of Holocaust denial." And so I'm thinking, well, is this guy for it, against it? Because I couldn't tell in the beginning what he was doing. But then when I started reading, I said, what this guy is doing, he's actually showing us all our information and what's going on with it, like all in one spot. I mean, it was incredible to see that he went through all the Holocaust denial type of websites and people and put their information on this one article. And I'm going through it. I'm saying, this is incredible, because, you know, for someone to put this together, there's a lot of information in here. So, you know, I think it was great, because he didn't interview, but he tried to speak to certain people, and he didn't really care for them, like Deborah Lipstadt. He didn't like her at all. He felt that she wasn't an honest person and how she presented her material. And, you know, so he went through them all. He went to all these people, explaining about these people, what they're saying, pro and con, and he'd tell you if he thought what they were saying was made sense or didn't make sense. But it seemed to me, when the article's all done, he actually respected the revisionist view. And I think if you had a vote for it, you'd see that he was more or less on our side.
Yes, exactly. I mean, he comes at it as sort of this novice, and he's kind of just doing his best to explain both sides. And he's just being honest. And I think if you are being honest and you do start exploring the alleged Holocaust narrative, it falls apart before your eyes with a quickness. And, you know, it's like that with many, you know, narratives of history, 9/11 and you know, other narratives of history as well. But especially so with the Holocaust. But it's just such a powerful myth in our, you know, in our society, that very few people have the ability to sit down and think critically about it. And this guy did, and you know, did a very good job of explaining it all, and kind of discussing the history of revisionism. And the article was prompted by this controversy around Reason magazine, which is like this libertarian type magazine. And apparently back in the 70s, they had dedicated an entire issue towards the topic of revisionism, and published one article in particular, from what I understand, that was more or less, you know, questioning the official Holocaust narrative, questioning the number, the 6 million, and just questioning the overall narrative in general. So that's kind of what prompted the article. But in it, throughout it, if you go read it to the very end, which I encourage everybody to do, it gives you kind of an overview of the history of the revisionist movement, lays out the different arguments, and puts together, you know, just the basic facts that, if you're being honest, I mean, you'd have to question the official narrative and say, what the heck is going on with this? Why are there so many holes? Why, for example, did the Auschwitz Museum in Poland officially reduce the death toll from, what was it, 4 million, I think, which is what they originally said, and they reduced it officially, the State Museum officially reduced it down to 1 million, and yet, you know, the 6 million still remains. So, you know, he makes a lot of very good basic points about it. And I was very impressed. And what is amazing about it is this guy, Ron Unz, is himself Jewish. He is a Jewish, from what I understand, business owner. And he's also gotten involved in politics in the state of California. And he publishes this, you know, this news outlet now. And he himself wrote this article. So I was very impressed with it. Diane, what were your thoughts on the article?
Having just read it today all the way through, he provided a chronology of almost a non-existent presentation of the Holocaust to include, and he included this, that the three dominant historical accounts, biographies, autobiographies, Churchill, Eisenhower, and de Gaulle, said nothing about anything in regard to what might be construed as an extermination policy, gas chambers, and so on. Oftentimes, what's not included is very telling. and that's been presented, but it's always played down. And also about how the key players in the most atrocious murders of history were Jewish, the communists and so on. I mean, he went into that. Of course, that was well received. But I think what really impressed him is that when this juggernaut of Holocaust promotion, starting with it wasn't starting with, but the Holocaust miniseries, and then you had Sophie's Choice, and how Hollywood had just rushed this through, that Norman Finkelstein gave this screeching halt kind of expose on Jews, because he was able to provide enough evidence to declare to provide an impetus to defend the Palestinians, because up to this point they actually were not being disenfranchised of their homeland. And had he not stepped in, it would have happened. Okay, now here is he ruined everything, actually. So they come after him. And then, but what has happened is through, he didn't mention Schofield, how Schofield has jettisoned the Christian element, by, thwarting and changing the whole narrative of the Bible. And the, whereas before Schofield came, there was, Catholic Church or whatever, there was no consideration for the Jews. They had obviously been part of a conspiracy to kill Christ. They bring nothing to the table since then, and they weren't even considered. Once Schofield inserted his endnotes and footnotes into the narrative, and this thing really took hold, all of a sudden the Christians are now hamstrung. My biggest problem is with family members who buy into the quote-unquote Judeo-Christian thing. I've had more people shut me down in my family because of this. And so the Jews have created their own set of minions in regard. Well, he talks about how it's becoming less popular to assert yourself in, let's say, I'm a Third Reich advocate. Jim is what you might call a revisionist publicist. That's what Mark Weber called him, a publicist. Well, I'm an advocate. My whole philosophy is how you deal with and perceive the world is based on how you perceive Adolf Hitler. If you buy into the mantra and the mainstream crap, you don't get it. If you don't, you're starting to learn. So that's a real litmus test for it. But this gentleman here who presented this took it from the 70s when this whole thing was kind of bubbling, up until the Zundel trials and how David Irving was kind of converted, if you will, because of the Leuchter Report, and how, but once these people were identified, how the Jews descended upon them, well, a total scorched earth of a person's life. And so you think, well, we don't have that now. Yes, we do. Jim and I have done a number of videos on free speech. What are we for? Our kids are going overseas and fighting for our freedom. Every time they go there, we lose more freedoms. Then we're there fighting, and YouTube is shutting us down. They're going to come back and say, what the hell are we fighting for? We lost our freedoms while we were gone. And so anyway, this guy brings all this kind of thing out, the targeting of people who oppose the mainstream mantra. But it really didn't get picked up and rolling until the 70s. When Hollywood infused these emotional, mind-numbing, don't think about the facts kind of, you know, who wouldn't feel emotional? I've seen all of them. I've immersed myself in all of them. I know what they do. And it's, and you know, he brings it up too. And it's just watching the chronology of revisionism and the attack on reason. I like the Reason name for their magazine, that they're libertarian. You would hope that libertarians would come to our rescue. And so, right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What's interesting is apparently back in the day, back in the 70s anyways, the libertarians did sort of champion this sort of free thinking, this revisionist perspective. And now, I mean, the big scandal was that this magazine came to light, this edition, where it did actually publish revisionist perspectives. And Reason was denouncing it and apologizing for it. So they've kind of done a 180. You know, now, which really shouldn't surprise anybody, because again, a central theme of this article is how people that do question the Holocaust are targeted and demonized and slandered, and their lives are ruined. They're sent to jail. They're fired from their jobs. They can't make any money. So yeah, that doesn't really surprise me, but it is definitely worth reading. It's probably one of the best articles that I've read in certainly recently, that just put it all together, that really give you a good idea of what the debate is all about, how flawed the official narrative is, and how many holes there are. I mean, again, he points out just some very basic points. And this is also another thing I wanted to bring up, is this guy, Unz, is sort of like a, I don't want to say he's mainstream. I mean, that probably wouldn't be accurate at all. But I don't think you could call him, you know, a far right radical, right? I mean, the guy's Jewish after all. He publishes, Kevin MacDonald and many other people. And a lot of these people, have been very reluctant to address the Holocaust. Many of them, actually take it for face value, which in my view is very counterproductive to our overall struggle, the nationalist struggle, the pro-white struggle. So I think it's really important. I think his article really demonstrates this, that, you know, kind of understanding the basics about the whole debate surrounding the Holocaust is so crucial. It's so important for any nationalist or pro-white activist to have this basic understanding of what this debate is all about. And again, just how fatally flawed the official narrative is. And it's easy to demonstrate that. I mean, you know, if you had to sit down and talk to somebody and list, you know, 5 or 10 reasons why you don't, you know, just blindly accept the official Holocaust narrative, you could do that after reading this sort of article. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jim, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that this article, someone could actually, if they had, you know, this is something I'd love to do, but it'd be very time consuming. Just use this article as a documentary. The comment and bring the information in. It would be a phenomenal, video if you could do that. So, but getting back to the point that the only thing I talk about is the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. All right. That's my only topic. It's not because I don't think anything else is important. I mean, I could talk about 9/11. I could talk about JFK assassination and all these conspiracy things happening. But I personally feel if you don't have this topic straight, nothing else is going to matter, because this is where it all went astray right after World War II. Okay. And you have to look at, you know, World War I and World War II is just a continuation. That's all it was. You know, they tried to get Germany down and out during World War I. They failed. And then, you know, Germany comes back again and they try to do it again, but this time they succeeded. But, the reason why they succeeded is because they had to really lie, their way into what was really going on the world scene. And the real enemy was communism and it wasn't Hitler. So, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, they brainwashed everybody to make Hitler the bad guy. And, they had the banking system come against them. I mean, this is money talks, and they got everybody convinced that Hitler was the bad guy. And if Hitler won, I think things would have been a lot different over in Europe, and we wouldn't have had, obviously, the wall set up over there in Europe with the communists and all the countries that they took over. Things would be a lot different. But anyway, the right person, you know, lost the war. What can I say? And, you know, we have to deal with it.
Yes, I want to let Diane respond, but I just want to totally agree with what you just said, basically. I mean, I think the official narrative of World War II specifically, and this hysterical demonization of Hitler and the Nazis, and this endless promotion and perpetuation of this, it really is this fake, totally false narrative of an alleged Holocaust, an alleged genocide of the Jews during World War II. This is like the bedrock of our entire civilization. I mean, our basic historical paradigm is shaped by this narrative, by the official narrative of World War II and the Holocaust more specifically. So, I mean, in order to understand what's going on in the world, you have to understand what really took place during World War II, what it was all about. So I completely agree with you. Diane, did you want to add anything?
Just that in regard to our Vimeo, my cable shows were using, I used Vimeo to communicate with the cable stations. And so when they shut me off, we had to scramble, if you will, to find an alternative. We've been doing that ever since. That's why I sent you, there's probably 6-8 links that we use, our videos, our, they're just things we have to resort to. We attempted to resort to Real Video, for example. And I know I'm going back to something, Real.Video. We were told, oh yeah, freedom of speech and all. We get a message. Somebody calls us from Switzerland and says it's regionally restricted. And yet Real Video says that they don't have any freedom of speech issues. Not to say that Switzerland doesn't, or any of the other 41 countries don't have issues with things that come with the titles that we have. But we expect, because of the way Real Video was set up with strikes and sanctions, that, you know, they'll be next. And so we're constantly looking for a home for places that we can put our videos to be able to, because all we need is a link to share them. BitChute is not the best. Okay, and so this is our attempt. They were talking about that in the latter part of this article, Linz's article, how they're coming after people. Amazon, Germar Rudolph has had 200 of his titles removed, German and English. A number of our friends still have some books up on Amazon. Mike Walsh has had his. He does a lot of Third Reich advocacy. He's had his removed as well. Jim has always maintained, if you're going to do something, go to the jugular. He calls it the finger in the eye. You know, that's why the Holocaust is so important, because that's the power. That's why we have this illustration using the Japanese flag of where the Holocaust is in the center. Everything springs from that. Because it all is affected by it, whether it's Hollywood or medicine or art or any fashion, any of this stuff is springboards from the Jews' power using the Holocaust. That's why it's so important. And, you know, we attempt to make an argument in that regard. The League of Extraordinary Revisionists are, they're still around. We're supposed to get together with Fred, his wife, is not well. I'm not sure if we will, but we still try to keep up with these people. Forasan is still alive and kicking. The people who are in prison, unfortunately, the list is becoming longer. You know, we're communicating with 5 people in prison in Europe right now because they dare to challenge the official narrative of the Holocaust. But that's the tactic they're using.
Yes. And, you know, I want to talk about that, actually. I want to talk specifically about Monica and Alfred Schaefer, their situation in Germany. Before we turn to that, though, I tweeted this article out, this UNS Review article. It was really incredible. And one of the most important sentences in this entire piece he says here, I think it far more likely than not that the standard Holocaust narrative is at least substantially false and quite possibly almost entirely so. And I thought that was so powerful and so well put that, you know, here's this guy just honestly investigating this subject. This is the honest conclusion he came to. And, you know, I thought it was very, very good. And I hope, what I really hope is that more and more people in the nationalist struggle, in the alt-right, that maybe haven't really taken a strong stand on the Holocaust, read this and, you know, handle the issue better. I mean, I really think it's so counterproductive when we go along with it, you know, when we don't challenge it or point out some of the simple, most basic points about it and how people are being persecuted, how this is like the one event that you can't question. So I think it's very good. And Jim, did you have anything else you wanted to mention about this article before we talk about?
Well, if you know a good article is good when you see how many people have commented. There's 1,700 at this point, comments on this article, which is absolutely phenomenal. And the comments themselves can be a discussion point, okay? Because a lot of these people that are commenting are not stupid people, and they know information, and they know what's true, and they're directing, you know, if you get into these comments, they're putting links up to other things that you wouldn't even know about it. And you go to these links, and oh my goodness, and it puts you into the, you know, you go down the rabbit hole here after just reading the comments. So that's another, you know, usually, you know, you get 10 comments. Oh, okay, great. You know, but this just keeps going on and on and on.
Yes, yes. And this is a pretty popular website as well. Lots of very intelligent people read this. So yeah, I think it's very good. Okay, well, yeah, let's talk about Alfred and Monica Schaefer. This is something that I've been following, their legal situation in Germany since really it happened. I haven't really spoken too much about it. I think it's absolutely disgusting what they're going through. It really just makes my blood boil to think that, you know, this great sister, brother, they've both been on this podcast before. You guys know them very well. I don't know if you guys have ever actually met them in person. I never have, but I feel like I have. I feel like I know them personally, you know what I mean? Because we share very similar views and you know, feel very passionately about these subjects. And both of them were very courageous and always stood up for the truth and were very decent, honorable people. And to see them, you know, locked up, it just makes my blood boil. It's absolutely disgusting. Diane, could you maybe give us just a background of the situation, going back to maybe when Monica was first arrested, which if I'm not mistaken, was it the beginning of this year?
Yes, it was. It was January 3rd, actually. She had gone to Europe to have Christmas with her brother. She's a Canadian citizen from Alberta, plays the violin, and she went to visit unknowingly Alfred. And incidentally, we had interviewed Monica when she had completed her video, Mom, I'm sorry, I was wrong about the Holocaust. And it's a 5 minute, and it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. Apparently, she and Alfred had created that video when she was in Germany a time before. So I guess that was their hook on her. And so she visits, she attended I'm not sure if it was a legal proceeding, but Sylvia Stoltz was there. It might have even been a trial about her or for her, and they arrested Monica on January 3rd. And then, of course, she didn't return to Canada. Canada basically, shamefully, has bailed on her. Huge surprise. They're so Jew-controlled, you know, they squeak bagel. So, I'm absolutely not. I'm having had dealings with the Canadian government through Paul and other people and watching them victimized, it's absolutely no surprise that they don't come to her rescue. And our wretched government wouldn't either. I admire Donald Trump, but he has no idea what he's up against with the Jewish influence. So anyway, then Alfred, totally outspoken. We have been on numerous discussion groups with him on Brexit Party from England. Alfred's extremely outspoken, wonderful, wonderful guy. He rushes. He's the kind of guy that will rush toward a confrontation. He couldn't wait for them to make his day kind of thing. And so when he was arrested and, you know, his computers were taken and so on, he just champions that. What he did in court, I mean, this is a real example for all of us. He was being charged concerning various videos. He made them play them, all of them. And so if you're charged for a video, that's your crime. Make them play it. Well, as a result, there is some sympathy with the guards, with the police. And it's just that Alfred can't see it, but he senses this morphing of what's going on in Germany. May even be because of what's happening to him and Monica and Ursula and Sylvia and the other people who have Gert. We're in touch with 5 people who are in prison, which it should never be, but is. And so it's very encouraging. He would not want us to be woebegone he would want us to be inspired by his example. Make them watch what you are being charged with. I said, if I'm being charged with the greatest story you ever told, we're going to watch all 6.5 hours. I'm telling you.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very sort of defiant and bold move.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've been reading about it, how he's trying to basically explain why he's saying the things that he's saying about the Holocaust. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's not as if he's just making random allegations. It's very, you know, well-founded, very factual. And that really is the case with the revisionist side of the argument. You know, we are using critical thinking, using legitimate evidence to present our case. Whereas the other side, it relies primarily on forged evidence, fake evidence, emotional testimony, much of which is entirely fraudulent, as we know at this point. So, yeah, it's interesting. Do you know where... Well, first off, I have a couple questions. The first one, what has been the response of the German media? I've read some articles in the Canadian press, which has basically demonized them. You know, they're sitting there quoting, like, B'nai B'rith of Canada, and, you know, they're talking about how terrible Monica Schaefer is because she questions the Holocaust. But what is has the German media covered this situation, or the situation of other revisionists who were imprisoned? Ursula Haverbeck, you mentioned, and I'm sure there's others, but has the German media covered this at all?
We have no way of knowing. And if they are, they're going to downplay it. The last thing they want is a couple of people, particularly a 90-year-old woman, a rallying point, but they can't avoid it. I haven't seen anything. Jim, have you seen anything in the
No.
Joe might have. I haven't seen
No.
anything.
No, I haven't seen anything. So, I mean, they're covering it up or trying to – they're keeping it out of the media. They don't want people Yes. to know what's going on here. That's how they work.
That's right.
Well, it's got to be – I mean, embarrassing almost, you know, as like a government official or as a police officer involved in all this, like, you know, persecuting and jailing these. I mean, I don't know how old Monica and Alfred are, but I mean, they got to be what, in their 50s or 60s, you know, these elderly brother and sister simply for making some videos question, you know, I mean, it's so insane and truly just shameful. And it really, I mean, to me, this is like one of the most important points that I always try to make when I'm talking to people that aren't really interested or don't know much about the Holocaust is, why are people literally locked up in jail for simply questioning the narrative and investigating? It's not even questioning it. It's just investigating it, seeing if it adds up. You know what I mean? Using critical thinking to think about these things.
Why can't we talk about it?
Right.
That's it. Why can't I talk about it? And that's what, when I present it to my family, why can't I talk about World War II? What are they trying to hide? Why are they taking sanctions against us? Why are they coming against us? And I think there's a certain degree of fear in this country of realizing this out of control enforcement, and this Soviet style draconian of suppression of free speech. You see, in our country, and you know, John, our government can't do that. But there's nothing that says companies can't. And that's why they came against Jared Taylor. Not that I'm a real advocate of his, but they came against the American Renaissance because hotels don't have to subscribe to the Bill of Rights. But the government does. That's why he went to the state park to have his meetings. YouTube and Amazon and Vimeo don't have to subscribe. They're not going to be sued because they don't fall in line with what the Bill of Rights is. They should, because it's a spirit in our country. But they don't have to, and they're not going to be taken to account for it either.
Yeah, I mean, really, we don't need the government to outlaw certain speech or outlaw, you know, questioning the Holocaust, for example. You know, that's basically enforced through the private sector, right? I mean, if you speak publicly, if you speak publicly about these things or write critically about it using your own name, I mean, you will be targeted. You know, you could lose your job, as you guys well know. you know, you're targeted, you're harassed, you'll lose your website, you'll get kicked off of Twitter, you'll get kicked off of YouTube, etc. So, I mean, in the United States, they really don't need a law explicitly denying these sorts of things or explicitly outlawing quote unquote Holocaust denial, because it's basically enforced through the private sector and through, you know, it's enforced almost culturally. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And it filters down, like I said, where the church is still, it's there, right? I mean, there's nothing more mind-numbing. You used to hear in the scriptures about how the Jews would rent their clothes and gnash their teeth and all that. Well, now the Christians are doing that. So once they figure out that you're not a supporter of Israel, or that you're coming against the quote-unquote chosen, even though the chosen are now the believers, but they don't see it that way. Well, you know, I'm just following what the scripture says, what they say about Israel. Really? You realize that not only did they crucify Christ, but they deny Christ today, and you're supporting it? Yeah, but you know, they were the chosen people. I mean, it's mind-numbing. They have no concept of what they're saying. And these are the people who will come after us, John, and will turn us in because they're the minions. They think they're doing God a favor.
Yes, it's a very bizarre situation we find ourselves in. Jim, I wanted to ask you, you know, we were kind of talking about what prevents people from being able to deal critically and reasonably with the alleged Holocaust narrative. And Diane had mentioned, you know, the fear factor, you know, people are afraid.
Good. You're breaking up. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to ask you, what do you think explains that? Can you guys hear me? I can hear you both fine right now. No, I was going to ask you, Jim, what explains...
Okay. So, what's the question again?
What explains this reluctance?
I don't know why he's breaking up.
What explains this reluctance for people to think and deal rationally and reasonably with the alleged Holocaust narrative?
All right. Well, I pretty much could understand the gist of what you're saying. Here's what this all comes down to, and this is very critical, very important to understand this. This has to do with actually inflicting pain upon you, and it has to do with cognitive dissonance. Okay. And what's happened with people is, okay, when you present a narrative, like, for instance, let's say, I'm just going to throw this out there. You know, you believe in Jack and the Beanstalk, okay? And you grow up believing in this, okay? And then all of a sudden, you find out that it's wrong, all right? Now, there's two things. It's either you can move on and accept it and say, okay, great, or it's gonna cause you real harm to your brain and how you function, and it's going to, you know, cause a problem with your psyche. And what's happened with the Holocaust narrative is the people have been conditioned for all these years. We've been conditioned, whether we realize it or not, by the movies, by the things that are written in print and everything else, you know, newspapers and everything. And you get to a point in your life when someone presents to you another viewpoint of it, okay, an alternative viewpoint of what happened during World War II. And then you see what they're saying, it hits you, and it's very painful for you to accept it because of the fact that your brain has actually been conditioned not to look at anything that goes outside the parameters of what you've been taught. And so when I talk to somebody, and I'll give you a perfect example. Let's say I'm talking to someone and they say, well, Jesus, you know, I heard you were a Holocaust denier. How can you deny the Holocaust? Haven't you seen all those bodies on the ground? Well, there you go. You see, what's happened is they've been conditioned to accept dead bodies on the ground and equate it that Hitler was killing Jews and these are the Jews, whereas they don't have any idea who those bodies are, how they died, and what's going on with the narrative there, okay? So people are just in pain to see the other side of the story because of the fact that they've been brought up with this narrative, and it takes, you know, it's withdrawals. So what happens is when we start talking to these people, if they even, you know, give you the time later, they actually have to go in withdrawal, okay, of what they were brought up on. And it's a painful process, but some people can bounce back pretty quickly, and some people it might take a lot longer, and then some people will not have anything to do with you. Just like, you know, Diane was talking about her family and this and that. I mean, there are family people that might not want to have anything to do with you because it's too painful for them to discuss it.
Yeah, those are all very good points. And I'm sorry, can you guys hear me okay right now?
Yeah.
Very well.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. We did have a poor connection. I hope this is coming through clearly. I apologize, audience, if there's a little bit of a breakup here. But no, I think you did make a lot of really good points. And it relates to one topic that I've kind of focused on and tried to explain in more detail. And that's the role of like the images of the Holocaust, the propaganda associated with the Holocaust, the propaganda that is used to instill this narrative and perpetuate it and reinforce it. I'm thinking about like the very traumatizing images of these dead bodies in the camps after the war, which again, as you mentioned, are presented out of context. Nobody really knows what's going on. It's just assumed that these piles of dead bodies were brutally murdered by the Nazis when that's not at all what happened. So that's one aspect of it, you know, the very traumatizing propaganda. But just the overall narrative, think about like all the Hollywood movies that come out. And most people know about the Holocaust through Hollywood movies. You know, they watch a movie like Schindler's List and they take it as, they may understand it as a movie, but they view it as something that actually really did happen, like a typical narrative of World War II, like something like this did actually happen during World War II, when it's, again, just not the case at all. Diane, you had mentioned earlier, you know, how the narrative was really kind of instilled and popularized in our culture. And it was through the Holocaust. I think the name of the miniseries was actually called just Holocaust. The Holocaust, yeah.
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 By Green, and it was a novel. Because I read the novel, and it absolutely was a novel. It was, but everybody who thinks, and we're, unlike in Eastern Europe, I understand, anything we see in print or on TV, we believe. They don't. That's why they were able to recover after the wall fell. We believe everything. We're just so mind-numbing. Obviously, we think Hollywood's telling us the truth, and so we believe everything. The Holocaust, Sophie's Choice, Schindler's List, all this crap. We believe it.
Yeah, it's true. And my goodness, they just keep pumping out the Holocaust movies and the books and the memoirs. I mean, every single day you could find some sort of news item dealing with and, you know, kind of perpetuating the official Holocaust narrative. It literally never ends.
Right. What I've done, John, is I set up what they call Google Alerts, which anybody can do. Go do a search for it, Google Alerts, and you set up whatever topic you want to get alerted to that's being discussed on the internet somewhere. Okay? And I obviously have Holocaust lies, Holo-hoax, revisionism, you know, people's names that I know that I care for and want to make sure they're okay. And when you do that, you'll get alerted, and almost every day I get, you know, 5 or 10 alerts on the Holocaust. It's kind of discouraging because most of the alerts are all the propaganda crap and all the lies. And when you see what they're presenting to these people, and it's just hard to understand that this is the narrative that the people have, and they don't know anything else because they won't allow these people to see anything else. And, you know, Diane and I were talking the other day about free speech. And I said, Diane, it really isn't, doesn't have to do with my free speech. I have plenty of free speech. The problem is they're not allowing anybody to listen to me.
Right. Yeah. That's a very good point.
So, I mean, that's where we're going right now. And I want to make another point about the Holocaust narrative. Do you know that the majority of the people that so-called lived through this, all these people today that are in their 80s, they were just babies then in the camps. They learned about the Holocaust by the movies, okay, and the books that were written, you know, 10, 20, 30 years later. They knew nothing about the topic. And if you sat down and you know, talked to these people about you know, what they said happened, you'll see that a lot of them are going to just repeat whatever they saw in a movie, in a book that was written, or whatever, because they didn't see anything.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they buy their own propaganda and their own absurd narratives. And it's amazing. I mean, you can see, for example, Eric Hunt. I don't know if he's really still active in the whole revisionist struggle and movement, but he's done a great job of just showing you people that allegedly survived the Holocaust. And you know, you can hear some of the fantastic, ridiculous, outrageous tales that they tell. And in many cases, a lot of these people have been exposed as being total frauds, total liars. Guy Herman Rosenblatt, I think is his name. Herman Rosenblatt, yeah. I think that's his name. Anyways, he comes to mind. You know, made up this entire story, this like love story with his wife, and wrote a book about it. And it turns out the whole entire thing is just totally made up. And there's an incredible quote from him in an interview that you can still find online, where he's talking about how it was real in his mind. Right. So it was everything. Basically, he was justifying his deceit in, you know, all the lies that he wrote in the book, because it was real in his mind. He made it up in his mind and it was real. Right. I mean, it just kind of summarizes the insanity that you get from, you know, Holocaust survivors and the official Holocaust, the people that promote it anyways, just the ridiculous things that they say and do is amazing.
Right. People, you know, if you ever could put these people in court to testify, which they won't do, you'll never. The Ernest Zundel trial was the only time that you'll see people were actually in a court setting and they had to testify about it. A couple times these things happen. The Mermelstein affair, is another story about what's his name? Mermelstein. Huh?
Mel Mermelstein, I think.
Yeah, Mel. Yeah, if you look up Mel Mermelstein, he testified in court too, but that's a whole other story. But if you put people in court to really have to testify, they would be lying, and the court would know they'd be lying, because a good lawyer would be able to expose what they're saying. But see, they never want to be in that setting to go to court and testify, because again, the whole thing would be thrown out if they had a testimony.
Right. Well, and see, that's correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that basically exactly what happened in Ernst Zundel's trial? They were actually, like, these Holocaust scholars and eyewitnesses and whatnot were actually cross-examined and you know, sort of subjected to some rational questions, and, you know, their testimony fell apart, and they actually made some incredible revelations. And then later on, during, you know, trials that took place after this, they didn't want to come back and testify. They were too afraid, because they were basically exposed as total liars.
Right. Well, they actually were probably told not to come back by the prosecutor, because they knew that if they came back, they were going to just make it worse. And
right,
so they, like Hilberg, I think, was one, a couple other ones, but yeah, they cannot survive an onslaught of questions that are put towards them that deal with facts and fiction. I mean, they're just going to say stuff that didn't happen when it can't be proven it happened. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Not only that, Doug Christie was able to do the cross-examination. He was a real, they called him the barrister. He was like a barracuda. And he went right for where they were weak. And he was a free speech advocate in Canada. Was a very big part of the Zundel trial and the Dream Team. And they couldn't refute him. And so he would nail them on their lies. And like you said, they often wouldn't come back. And then when Fred Leuchter came, and some of these others that would testify to their lies, Mark Weber even at the time. I'm not sure if David Irving was part of this process, but talk about a dream team. And yet, because the Jews could not refute the facts that what the defense attorneys were saying is what you're claiming doesn't add up. It's math. It doesn't add up. and they couldn't refute that. And so, but eventually, as you know, with Ernst Sundel, the case was overturned. He left Canada, and it's not a good story after that, because they came after him on that regard. But that's just the nature of the Jews. They of a scorched earth to our life. They think they will have the last laugh on this.
Yes. Diane, I wanted to ask you, where do you know where we're at with Monica and Alfred's incarceration? Are they awaiting trial, or do you have any like latest updates on what's going on over there?
I think there's something going on this week. Lady Michelle Renouf puts out something when she finds out, and it goes around. The problem is, we used to have it go through Arthur Topham, and he used to be really good about getting it to us, but he's been neutralized, and his account, his email account, has been disabled. And so we don't get it from him. Now, Allison in England and Lady Michelle, they provide us with information about what has happened, particularly Lady Michelle. And I haven't had anything lately. Like I said, the last from Monica and Alfred was August 21st and 23rd, and I haven't had anything since then. Now, it also goes through Brian Rue. He gets information. If he gets stuff, he sends it to us. Anybody who gets anything, we get it, we'll transcribe it and send it out. But I think they are facing the courts again this week.
No, the 14th.
Oh, 14th? Okay, mm-hmm. I apologize. Good, yeah. I'm glad you know that. So it's next week.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Well, my thoughts and prayers are certainly with those two courageous individuals. I got nothing but respect for them. And, you know, it really is tough to think about. I mean, it really makes me mad what they're going through. It's so unjust. It's just so wrong. And I think it really kind of demonstrates everything that's wrong, you know, with the official Holocaust narrative, and really should kind of make some bells ring, you know, in people's minds. You know, why are these two, you know, this very peaceful, productive, you know, brother and sister, why are they being locked up in Germany for, you know, having thoughts critical of the Holocaust? I mean, it's just absolutely insane.
Yeah. Sad.
Yes, it is sad. It's very sad. Yeah.
John, it's just a matter of time before we go through it, because they're trying to import the same tactics here. They're having trouble with the Bill of Rights. They still are. So they're trying to do an end run around it. It's still a barricade. They're having a hard time with it. So, but it's just a matter of time. Probably by the time Jim and I are 90, they'll have it figured out, and we'll be like Ursula. I mean, unless they're doing executions, because they are boring in their tactics, and they're applying Soviet style measures, and execution is their first choice. And of course they can't do that, because they have to act like they're in jurisprudence and all. So then they have to do the court thing, and they have to do the scorched earth on your finances. Jim and I are retired. They're having a little bit of a difficult time, but all they have to do is pass a law, an anti-Semitic law, and they're trying to do that in this country, and you know that. They're starting with the BDS, and that's a foot in the door, anti-BDS. And that's the boycott that the divestiture, I think, sanctions against Israel, products against Israel. That's being outlawed in this country of various companies and colleges. And once they get that passed, my cable shows will indict me. Jim's videos will indict him. And it, you know, we can actually, anti-Semitic laws will become a federal crime to say anything against Israel or Jews. And that's in the works right now.
Yes, it would not surprise me, but it also will not prevent me from speaking my mind and, you know, writing things and saying things and interviewing people and discussing these things openly and honestly, because that's what this country is all about, and these people are determined on fundamentally altering that, and they've done a very good job at that, but that is certainly not going to stop me, and I know it's not going to stop you guys. Yeah, you know, I wanted to wrap up. Diane, you had sent another email just on the 31st of August. The Holo Hoax summed up, and it's a little excerpt here. And this looks familiar. Do you know who actually wrote? I think I might have actually written this.
That's very possible, John. You know, your stuff.
I was trying to find it. Yeah, I'll read it. I'll read it here. It's just a couple of sentences, but sure. I think I may have written this in an article. I was trying to find it, going back through like my archives and my website and my old blog, and I couldn't find it. But it looks like something that I've written or something close to it, anyways. But it is a pretty good summary of the entire Hola hoax. So let me just read it, and then Jim, I'll get your comment, and Diane, I'll get yours, and then we'll wrap up tonight. And it says here, the alleged Holocaust of 6 million Jews at the hands of Adolf Hitler and National Socialist Germany during World War II is one of the most egregious and outrageous falsehoods ever perpetrated against mankind. Deceitful Jewish propagandists and their lackeys in the educational establishment, media, and Hollywood have foisted upon the world a completely baseless, manufactured narrative chock full of a wide variety of ridiculous claims and impossible events, all to advance the Jewish agenda of world domination and subjugation. The official Holocaust story has been used to justify the very existence of the criminal, terrorist Jewish state occupying Palestine, garner public sympathy for Jews, and elevate Jewish suffering above all others, and to reinforce the false narrative of historical Jewish persecution at the hands of evil, irrational anti-Semites who hate Jews. Organized Jewry has used the false Holocaust story to seize and distort our collective history for their corrupt ends, to demonize Adolf Hitler and National Socialist Germany specifically, and nationalism and European civilization more generally. It is, without a doubt, the big lie of the 20th and 21st centuries.
Yep.
Jim, your comments.
Well, I mean, that's I use that when I get on certain blog places where I can post a lot of, you know, info. You know, that's a lot of stuff in there. And yeah, that's kind of like, here it is summed up for you. If you really want to understand what it is, I couldn't say it any better than that. And you know, I hate to plagiarize them, but I use that. And I mean, I say it's not mine, but I mean, here it is, you know?
Yeah. I think it kind of compacts everything nicely, all the different angles to it. Diane, did you have any comments?
Just one thing. Jim always says that the Holocaust is sending Jews hundreds of miles to kill them with bug spray. And, that, you know, of course, that's ridiculous. I have something that I like to call it Holocaustomania. It's subscribing to the politically correct view of the Holocaust without questioning or discussion. Rots the brain, corrupts the morals, and creates a psychopath. The only cure is the truth provided by those who oppose and contend against the wholesale force feeding and consequent perversion of the myth of the Holocaust.
Yes, and you two are doing your best to get this info out there, and you're doing a great job, and I'm really glad that we were able to catch up. It's been a long time. So thanks a lot, both of you, for joining me this evening. We'll definitely have to do this again.
John, thank you. And you're doing a good job, too. We appreciate
Absolutely.
What you're doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, and we will talk to you both real soon.
Okay, yeah. Take care now.
Bye-bye.